Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. And surely the government does not want you focusing too much on Iraq. It's an issue that's always been in the news for the last 2-3 years, and yet it's kind of never in the news. You know, it's one of those things that's always there, but you kind of get tired of hearing it because you don't really want to focus on the details. I understand that. That's why I haven't devoted too many shows to Iraq lately. But it is an ongoing problem, and it's an ongoing, ever more serious problem. And certainly the government does not want you to know the contents of a classified CIA cable that had to be leaked to the press because, you know, the Bush administration, they don't like to disclose information that doesn't make them look very good. And this classified CIA cable says that the situation in Iraq is deteriorating. And in fact, it is extremely unlikely to improve any time in the near future. And we can see that just by looking at the numbers of U.S. dead and wounded. Again, the Bush administration doing its best to control information, as the Soviet Union did, as certainly any dictator would do. It's understandable when you have a one-party state, you don't want information coming out that is bad news. Frankly, it's true even in a democracy. But we find that the toll of U.S. dead each month is approximately the same as the entire toll of U.S. dead from the beginning of the Iraq War in March 2003 till the day that George Bush declared the war in Iraq over in May 2003. When he stood up on that aircraft carrier and said that major combat operations are over, the war in Iraq is won. Well, sadly, even the president, though he would never admit to making a mistake because, he's against admitting mistakes, even the president would have to admit the war in Iraq is not yet won. We are losing more than 100 dead a month now, more than 1,000 wounded a month now, and each month, we lose, as I said, about the same number of dead and wounded we lost in the entire Iraq War, at least that the president calls the Iraq War. Apparently post-war Iraq, where we've lost 10 times, well, maybe only 9 times, the number of people as we lost in the entire war that the president called a war. I don't know. How is it the post-war is more dangerous, 9 times more dangerous than the war itself? We've got to focus on these numbers. We've got to focus on the fact that more and more Americans are dying. And I think the question comes, whether you supported the war or not, when is it over? When does it end? When can we leave? Desertions are going up. There's at least 5,000 known Americans that have deserted from the Army. Many of them are living in Canada, just as in the Vietnam era. And I have to ask myself, how is it that they're deserting the Army is any different from George Bush going AWOL from Vietnam? Some Americans, I saw this on 60 Minutes, some Americans are calling for the death penalty for people who join our volunteer Army right after September 11th, are willing to fight in Afghanistan, but are not willing to fight in Iraq. And yet we had a president who in a time of draft not only dodged the draft, but even dodged his dodge of the draft. And he's not only no one's calling for his death, but he's president of the United States. How can that be? And I want to know from you, do you have any sympathy for the deserters? I mean, I realize you signed a contract and you should stick with it, but do you have sympathy for them? And what about the people that are in the backdoor draft? You know, there are two lawsuits going on right now, and it's amazing because they're flip sides. There are thousands of Americans who are suing because they don't want to be drafted into the all-volunteer Army. Bush calls it the all-volunteer Army, but these are people who are being drafted against their will because they once served in the military in the past. They don't want in. And then you have equally thousands of Americans who want to serve their country, patriotic, capable Americans who are not allowed to serve because the Bush administration considers anti-gay prejudice more important than saving American lives, even though there's a shortage of troops, even though there's a shortage of Arabic translators. So you have some Americans who are suing to get out and other Americans who are suing to get in. And I don't know how you can call this an all-volunteer army when we're not letting people who want to serve serve, and we're making those who don't want to serve, serve as well. There's so many things to talk about. There's new information that's come out on torture. You, now, these stories first came out, you remember the Republicans saying, oh, it's someone lower down. I insisted that the secret information that I was privy to showed that, in fact, it went up to the very highest levels. And now that it's known that it's the very highest levels, it's the President of the United States, it's Don Rumsfeld, that the Red Cross has documented case after case of torture and murder by our troops, now it seems like it's getting very little press. And I have to say that's a very typical way of dealing with bad news. First you deny it, and when the truth comes out, you ignore it. Now, Bill Clinton didn't do that too well when it came to Monica Lewinsky. But when it comes to torture, violating international law, which I don't need to remind you, the Geneva Conventions are not only a treaty America signed, but they're part of our Constitution, because our Constitution says that treaties have the equivalence in value of our Constitution, of our laws. Does it matter to anyone in the United States that we're constantly violating international law? And where does it all end? One inside scoop that I want to talk about today is that the party likely to win the Iraqi elections wants us out of there. It's the Shia party, and the majority of Iraqi is of the Shiite religion. So if they win, and if they insist that we leave, and they create a state like Iran, are we truly better off than we were before? Remember, there was no al-Qaeda presence in Iraq before we got involved, but there is now. And America, at least Americans, who voted for President George W. Bush because he's fighting the war on terror, they said, have very little to show for it. Apart from the war in Iraq, what are we doing to fight terror? And does the war in Iraq have anything to do with terror? We don't have enough armor to protect our military. When are we going to leave? And if it devolves into civil war, which I think is likely, whose side will we take? There are a lot of questions here. It's an ongoing thing, and I think some of us are just tired of it. But we still have Americans dying. We have Iraqis dying. Whether the figures are 20,000 or, as some have shown, some professors have shown, it could be 100,000 Iraqi civilians killed, and we won't even keep records. When Israel kills 23 Palestinians, which I'm not justifying, that's front page news, or at least page A6. Israel kills 23 Palestinians. What if we have killed 100,000 civilians? It seems that no one disputes we've killed at least 20,000 civilians. Why isn't that front page news? Just because the Pentagon says we don't want to keep records on it? There's a lot to talk about here, and I want to hear from whether you supported the war or against the war. I want to know from you, what are we fighting for, and when do you think it will all end? If you supported the war, are you willing to stay 5 years, 7 years, 10 years? How long are you willing to stay in Iraq? My own view is that right after the elections, it's about time for us to leave. Let me know your thoughts. Call in 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can do what many of you like to do already, and that is comment on the blog. Just go to www.radioinsidescoop.com and leave your comments there, and we'll be reading some of them on the air. Let me go to the phones. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine.
Yes, Mark.
Yes.
I'm Alice from Northern California.
Hi, Alice. How are you?
Well, I'm 90 years old, and I've seen a lot of things, but that we really are in a mess.
Yep.
And why do you think we are still in Iraq? Didn't do anything to us.
I think...
Is it something to do with profits, like oil?
Well, you have to ask who we're talking about. Why do I think Donald Rumsfeld's in Iraq, Bush, or why do I think Americans support the war? I think they're two separate questions. If you ask why are we in Iraq, at the end of the day, it's because Americans voted to elect President George W. Bush in November.
Oh, well, I didn't.
Well, I didn't either. But I think for Americans, and this is totally separate from our leaders, I think it's two separate groups. For Americans, I think the ones that voted for Bush, the ones that support the war in Iraq, I think they truly believe that it's a fight in the war against terror. I think they've been tricked. They've been convinced by the president that somehow Iraq has something to do with 9/11, even though overwhelming evidence in case after case, whether you look at the 9/11 report or international agencies, the IAEA, or you look at the CIA, or even Colin Powell, frankly, you know that that's not true. But I have to say, you know, people seem to think the majority of Americans can't be tricked. But the majority of people are tricked all the time. I mean, the majority of Germans supported Hitler, right? A large number of Russians supported Stalin. People can be tricked. Even in a democracy, we had a lot of Americans, the majority supporting segregation. We had the majority supporting demagogues like Huey Long or like Joe McCarthy. You can trick the majority of the people when you have control of every branch of government and when you control the press, which is largely what the Republicans have done. Now, I'd like to hear if someone disagrees with me, they can call in and let me know, Alice. But that's why I think the Americans are there. Now, why do I think the administration is there? I think you're right. Obviously, it is oil. One of the reasons we know that is because in January 2001, 10 days after Bush came into office, something I repeat constantly, but you don't hear much in the mainstream press, we know we have the documents that Don Rumsfeld and George Bush and Dick Cheney were all dividing up Iraqi oil fields. On January 30th, 2001, about a month before Colin Powell goes to Egypt and says, by the way, Iraq has no weapons of mass destruction and isn't a threat to us. So clearly oil is a big player. There are large profits to companies like Halliburton, companies like Enron, companies where the president and his friends have large interests. Absolutely. But I guess another thing, and it's hard to say, you know, I'm just speculating probably like you are, but another thing I think, and it's something that some of my listeners have pointed out, it's psychological. We didn't get Osama bin Laden at Tora Bora. We failed. And so we picked on someone we could get, and that was Saddam Hussein. And that was to make Americans feel better. It's kind of like, as I've argued, if big brother hits middle brother, and middle brother gets so upset, but he can't hit his big brother because he's bigger. So he hits his little brother, and then he feels better. So I think a lot of it is psychological. But I've answered a lot. Let me ask you, Alice, why do you think we're in Iraq?
Oh, well, the whole thing is just, I don't know, it's overwhelming. I just can't imagine why Bush would want to get into it. Because, you know, we're losing.
Yeah.
We're losing our boys.
Yeah.
And
our girls, too.
Heart.
Yep.
And I can't see any. I've heard that it could go on for 12 years.
Yeah, they're predicting at least 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And I don't really see an end game in sight. You know, what's interesting is that the one person who really believed in overwhelming force to win a battle, who believed in an end game, that was Colin Powell, kind of the adult in the room full of children, if you will, the guy that said, now, wait a minute, if you break Iraq, you've bought it. You know, we have to think about post-war. We may not be greeted as liberators. But, of course, the realist, Colin Powell, is now out of there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Alice. I don't know whether if this occurs 4 more years from now, if Americans who supported the war will wake up and see that it's not really achieving anything. I hope it does. I hope Iraq miraculously turns into a democracy, doesn't go into civil war. I just don't see it. Thanks for your call, Alice. I appreciate
it. Yeah, and thank you, and keep up the fight.
I will. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine.
Mark, don't you know why we're in Iraq?
Why are we in Iraq?
And we're in there to spread democracy through the Middle East. If we can go into Iraq and show all the Arabs out there how easy it is and how wonderful it is, then the rest of the countries will just fall like dominoes.
Well, maybe do we teach them democracy like we have it in Florida or like we have it in Ohio? I'm not sure which democracy we need to teach them. Maybe we need to give them electoral college. And that way they can – I mean, I've never – I understand that that's what people say. It's the third rationale. Weapons of mass destruction
right.
went out the window. Ties to Osama bin Laden went out the window. So now it's democracy throughout Iraq.
Right.
And, you know, there are places where for far less troops we could spread a lot more democracy. The first example that immediately comes to mind, of course, is Sudan, where you have an ongoing genocide. You have a very weak political government, far weaker than Saddam Hussein even was, mm-hmm. where the people really would greet us as liberators. We'd be saving their lives. If we want to promote, hey, not just democracy, but just life itself, people not being murdered by genocide, which we used to care about, we'd be in Sudan in a minute. And, of course, that not, you know, there are other countries as well, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Syria, North Korea.
That's right.
A number come to mind.
You know what's funny about all this is, I mean, I remember back when this was first starting, I remember thinking, gosh, you know, I mean, maybe we do need to go in. Maybe, you know, Saddam isn't showing us all his cards. I mean, he is being kind of underhanded. I mean, you know, if doesn't the UN have to stand up at some time? I remember thinking all this. But at the same time, I was thinking, you know, you got to be kidding. Do you really think we can just go into Iraq and, you know, they'll greet us as liberators? I mean, are you kidding me?
We did think that. Wolfowitz testified to it. Wolfowitz said, Paul Wolfowitz wins for most wrong on this. He said we only need 10,000 troops. Only 10,000 troops. We go into Baghdad, we get rid of Saddam Hussein, and the people will greet us as liberators.
With flowers.
And then, you know, I don't know what he was smoking. No, go ahead.
And then once we get there, once we're kind of taking control of the place and supposed to make the country better for them, what do? Well, Bremer comes in and he's gets rid of the whole army.
Right.
He says all the public, all the natural resources are open for private interest.
Right.
And that these private interests can take 100% of the profits out of the country. Therefore, you have vast unemployment. I mean, democracy is looking really good to these Iraqis now.
You know, democracy is a good thing, and I am for promoting democracy in the Middle East. And I think one of the things the Bush administration successfully does in a really Orwellian fashion is to steal language. You know,
right.
They say, we want to promote democracy in Iraq. How are we going to do that? George Bush is going to install a dictator who's going to appoint other dictators who are going to postpone elections till several years later.
We're going to have a fascist government.
Right, and that will promote democracy. And it's very interesting because then it's like, are you against promoting democracy? You know, or do you support Saddam Hussein? If you're against the war in Iraq, you must like Saddam Hussein. Well, you know, I don't like the leaders of China. They're vicious people. Have you seen Tiananmen Square? But I don't support nuking it. Call me crazy. Maybe, you know, I have to argue that George Bush likes the Chinese dictators after all. Not only does he not nuke them, he trades with them. But it's how they really manipulate language very well. And I think that there are ways to promote democracy in the Middle East. I've argued, in fact, that the linchpin of all of this, there are really two countries who are the linchpin. One is Saudi Arabia and the other is Iran. Iran is more dangerous, more powerful. It's likely to get nuclear weapons. But in some ways, that power of Iran is really limited to weapon systems. I actually think that in many ways Saudi Arabia is the most dangerous threat to the United States and to the world because they are funding with billions of dollars of oil money, which obviously we pay for because we don't want to – Bush doesn't want to seek alternative energy. That would hurt the oil companies. But with the billions of dollars in oil money, they fund American hatred around the globe. And they've done it for 20 years. And if we had a president that really wanted to crack down on terrorism, the first place they would crack down is its ideological pinnings. What people don't seem to understand is that people don't hate our freedom. They don't hate our democracy. They are taught to hate us. And some of it's justified. Some of it is based on things we've done in the world. And some of it's unjustified. But whatever it is, we have our great ally, Saudi Arabia, who's teaching, promoting all of this.
Yeah, can you talk about – I'm going to hang up. Can you talk about that some more? I've always wondered exactly what's wrong with Saudi Arabia. Is it, you know, as far as government is concerned, is it oppressing the people? And how exactly are they promoting?
Great question, and I will hang up on you, and I will try to answer that. It's obviously it's a very long history here. Saudi Arabia. In fact, I think it's important for people to know the history. Back, you have to really go back to World War I. Prior to World War I, Turkey was the Ottoman Empire, and it conquered most of the Arab lands in the 1500s, and was controlling them well up until World War I. Even though the central government in Turkey was getting weaker and weaker. And anyway, the British and the French in World War I were against Turkey, and they conquered much of the lands. And then they split it up among the various sheikhs and emirs who had helped them in the war. And at this time, it was mostly it still is in some ways, a tribal population throughout Arabia. People going around with camels to water holes. It wasn't even a very large settled population. In fact, there were more wandering Bedouins than there were people settled in the cities. And certain groups helped the British. One of them is the Hashemite family, which, in fact, the King Hussein today is a descendant of this family. And this family helped the British, and the British promised them land, just as the Jews helped the British, and they promised the Jews a state in Palestine. So they promised the estate, and in fact they set up the two brothers of this king. They just gave it to them. They gave the whole huge state of Iraq to one of them and the whole huge state of Saudi Arabia to another. Well, the Saudi clan, if you will, was a powerful tribe in Saudi Arabia, didn't like the British installed government, and had a little coup back in the 20s, overthrew the British leader, and they made a deal with their fellow Muslims, their fellow Arab tribes. They said, we will protect the shrine. We will protect the holy cities of Mecca and Medina, the holiest cities in Islam, and we will have an Islamic government. In return, you will let us, the Saudi family, rule Arabia. There's no particular reason why the Saudis should rule Arabia versus any other tribal clan, but that was the deal made. And as time went on, the government, the monarchy, the Saudi monarchy, became pretty much like any monarchy, not the worst in the world, not the best either. They obviously, the people did not have as much rights as the monarch, who was solely in power. In fact, the Saudi royal family, while emphasizing Muslim law in Saudi Arabia, strict Muslim law, I should say, no drinking, for example, no smoking, women having, frankly, today, the least rights they have in any country on earth. Used to be second to the Taliban, but the Taliban's gone. And so they enforce strict Islamic law in Saudi Arabia while being perfectly hypocritical about it, as the royal children went to Switzerland, went to Europe, and did drink and smoke and gamble and sleep around and treat women immodestly and do all kinds of un-Islamic things. So there were two ways to oppose the Saudi monarchy. There were two groups, if you will. There were the secular group and the Islamic groups. The secular groups were opposed to Saudi Arabia because there was no democracy there. The Islamic groups said, hey, you're being a hypocrite. You know, you are pretending to enforce Islamic law, but the royal family, everybody knows, is going around and breaking Islamic law. So the Saudis knew that they couldn't go with the secular people. Because if you go with the secular people, what do you end up with? You end up with a constitutional monarchy. You end up with democracy. You end up with kicking them out of power. So they decided to side with the Islamists. And they bought them off. And they gave billions of dollars to these things called madrasas, which are schools. And these schools are taught by radical Muslims. And the more radical, the more money they get, because the more radical ones are the ones the Saudis fear most. It is hush money, if you will. It is blood money. It is money to protect the Saudi government. And these radical groups got more and more radical and went all over the globe, went into Afghanistan to fight the Soviet Union, and were aided by us. I mean, let's not forget, we gave weapons that Osama bin Laden ended up using. And so the Saudis continue to fund them, and now I think it's coming back to bite them. Now these Islamists, having gotten all this money, are going back and still attacking the Saudis for not being Islamic enough. So it's kind of like when you give in to the mafia, right? When you pay for protection. And eventually the people who are, quote, protecting you, unquote, realize that, hey, you're a big source of money. They can do better just by knocking you off. So I wonder whether, with enough push by the United States, if we couldn't push Saudi Arabia to realize it's in its own interests to start siding with the Democrats rather than the Islamists. And because it's a tough balance for them. I mean, it worked for Musharraf. It worked for the head of Pakistan, who also used to support the Taliban, used to support the most radical Muslims. We put a lot of pressure on him, and he switched. I venture to say the reason we're not putting pressure on Saudi Arabia has to do with Bush's past with Saudis. The fact that they've aided him so much, given him so much money in the past. I've done shows on that. You can check my archives. But it seems to me that if we could get a handle on Saudi Arabia, we could actually make progress in the war on terrorism, which, of course, the war in Iraq is just a sideshow. But there's a lot more to talk about. I want to talk about the desertions. I want to know whether you think these people who've gone to Canada are traitors, or maybe they're more patriotic, at least, than our president, who went AWOL in Vietnam. I want to know what you think about torture as American policy, the backdoor draft, forcing people to serve who don't want to serve, and not allowing people to serve who do want to serve. What do you think about the thousands of Iraqi civilians that we've killed? And do you see an exit strategy? There's a lot going on here. Let me hear from you. 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We're going to go to commercial break. And when we come back, more from Iraq.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, how was the doctor the other day?
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me!
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you, on some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, you know, I figured at 760, getting a loan on the new car should be no problem.
Loan? What are you talking about, man? You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical help, and then there's financial help. With ScorePower from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 790 by the end of the year, you know, if I'm lucky.
Look, a little advice.
Yeah?
Eat a vegetable, a smoothie, something, man.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. ScorePower.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, talking about Iraq, talking about what's still going on. Why isn't this war over already? They told us we'd be in and out. We'd be greeted as liberators. Is there any way out? Do you think we can get out after the January elections? It seems that the party that is likely to win wants us out. Why isn't it that the Bush administration is telling us that? And what about torture? What about these new allegations? I'm going to go into them a little bit later in the hour. What about the American Red Cross, the International Red Cross? Are they lying? Is that why the Bush administration disagrees with them so much? Do we have a right to torture people in a country that never attacked us? Apparently the administration thinks so, but I want to hear from you. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or comment on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Hey, Mark, it's California Dave.
Hey, California Dave.
I don't see, one, that we're going to be able to do anything to Arabia. That is the Carlyle Alliance there. Arabia is buying up a lot of the United States and
That's true.
Lot of the U.S. debt.
That's true, too.
And I don't see us doing anything with China, that China's going to own a big, big piece of the United States. I understand that more than a third of everything that is the United States cooperative is now owned outside of the country.
Dave, you raise a good point that few people talk about, and that is that our enormous debt, our enormous tax cuts to the wealthy that have caused this huge unprecedented debt in American history, is actually harming us in the war against terrorism. That's not something you're likely to hear in the press very much. It's a good point.
That's why, you know, it so drives me up a tree, like your guest Tom there yesterday. People that are defending what is happening, I see it as willful. I see it as a very ignoble greed grab thing that's going on, and it's being done, I think, by people that have no regard and no concern for normal people. They just don't have it. It's like,
well, Dave, I guess I make a distinction here between the people who are actually doing this and the people who are following them. Clearly, I agree with you that Rumsfeld and Cheney and the architects of this war are doing it for their own, you know, they obviously help fund their own pockets. They also try to take America's attention off our failures to harm al-Qaeda and all of that. But for the people who support the war, people like my guest Tom, the Republican state chair of Utah yesterday, he's not getting anything out of it. He's not making any money off this thing. He truly believes that Bush can do no wrong, I guess.
I gather he's just sat down and listened to Limbaugh for too long, or Hannity or somebody. But, you know, right now we are building 14 of the world's largest military bases right there in Iraq. We are building the world's largest embassy right there in Iraq. So if there's anybody that's given you to believe that we have an intent to exit Iraq, there's evidence that, anybody can connect those dots, and it sounds like we intend to keep Iraq as, our thing for a long, long time.
But what's going to happen when there's an election in January and the Iraqi people vote to support a party that says, America, it's time for you to go? Then what happens?
I'm going to tell you about this, Mark. The GOP knows how to run elections. the Iraqis are just about to elect a U.S. puppet to be their president, and they will be also surprised, but I don't see it any other way.
Well, I wonder if they'll react like the people of Ukraine, come into Baghdad and say the U.S. did fraudulent elections.
But, I think most of them are afraid to even go register to vote because, they're seen now as the enemy. If they're playing by the U.S. rules, they have a good chance of leaving their head behind in the polling place.
Yeah. I actually think the most likely result is civil war. I think that the Shiites and the Sunnis and the Kurds probably should have been three states from 100 years ago because they're three different peoples living in three different parts of the land, and they're going to fight over it. And the Shiites are the majority, and they're going to insist that they control, and the Sunnis and the Kurds aren't going to like that. And I just don't know why we should be involved in this tribal warfare.
I'll understand it if they all say, first, before we go to war, let's all get together and take out this U.S.
Well, I think that's the one thing they agree on. Apparently, they all agree that we shouldn't be there. And, I do think there is an option for the Bush administration. I hate to give them advice that they could actually use that would be good for them politically, but it's the same advice that many people said we should have done in Vietnam, and that is declare victory and get out. In other words, let's come January, whoever the Iraqis elect, say, we won, and we're going to leave. And just leave. And then they can praise themselves, they can knock themselves on the back, they can say how... And then if Iraq goes into civil war, they can say, it's not perfect, but at least Saddam Hussein's gone. I think that rhetorically might be an option for them. Sadly, I don't think it's one they're going to choose.
Well, I am of the belief that set aside everything about bringing democracy to the Middle East, set aside everything about defending ourselves against weapons of mass destruction, everything... If what it comes down to is immense profits going into the pockets of the Bushes, Cheneys, the Halliburtons, the Bechtels, the Enron, then if that's what's driving this war, and that's where logic takes me, then I don't see them wanting to give that up. They've gone to a lot of effort to invade that country, to grab their oil, and that's what they got. They were not spread all over Iraq. We went immediately to grab their oil ministry and...
Right, and we have it. Dave, let me ask you, what do you think about the American GIs that have deserted, gone to Canada? Some Americans are calling for their death, and yet I have to ask myself, in a volunteer army, people who don't want to serve maybe shouldn't be made to serve. I mean, after all, that's different from Vietnam, where there was a draft and people like our current president dodged that draft and then even didn't even show up for the National Guard. I guess I believe that Bush's desertion, or at least his absence without leave from the National Guard, is more severe than these people deserting from our volunteer army. What do you think?
I think if they are aware of what I'm saying, that this is a totally ignoble war, and they, my country wants me to go over there and shoot poor people for oil profits for Cheney and company, I'm going to head for, I'm not going to be around. If I was a 17-year-old today, I would be headed for Canada.
The other thing is, we have to remember, it really is a bait and switch. And by the way, if you want to join this discussion, please feel free to do so. Call toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. But it really is a bait and switch. I mean, I don't know if you agree with me, Dave, but I certainly was so upset with what happened on September 11, 2001 that I strongly supported the war in Afghanistan. And I could see how someone like me would sign up and join the military to fight those that killed 3,000 Americans. But then it was a bait and switch, because then suddenly, 2 years later, a year and a half later, we're saying, we're going to go to Iraq. And people that signed up when they were 17 saying, yes, I want to fight back against those terrorists that killed so many Americans, are suddenly sent to a country that never attacked us. And there's a further issue here, and frankly, it goes back to the Nuremberg trials. And that is, if we are sending GIs to Iraq to torture people, and the evidence is overwhelming that we are, then the Nuremberg rules come to play. If you desert the military rather than torture someone, maybe you're the one following the law and the people that ordered you to torture are not. If we ask someone to torture somebody and they desert the military, who's right and who's wrong here?
Well, Mark, I don't know. I'm thinking you have been, you've read the new Pearl Harbor or Inside Job.
I've glimpsed through it. I can't say I've read it.
I'll tell you, that's something that I've just found it necessary to really study it. There is no way in hell that 9/11 ever could have happened without the White House modifying all kinds of standing orders. Fighter jets had to stay on the ground. It just could not happen unless the White House, the PNAC crowd, was saying, we need our new Pearl Harbor to justify invading Iraq. And that's what they did. They may have conspired to bring it about. As a certainty, they shut down the whole military system to allow it to happen. And this is some pretty seriously evil folks we've got that have stolen our government.
The question is, Dave, how do we get to the 59 million Americans that voted for George Bush? That's the question.
I don't believe they did that either. I believe the people that we're talking about are the kind of characters that putting in voting machines that are untraceable. They did that deliberately. Why did they do that?
Well, we're going to explore that tomorrow. In fact, I'm devoting another show to what's going on in Ohio and in the election. I've got some great guests tomorrow. I know, Dave, that you'll be listening.
Oh, for sure. And we are being duped every way that they can do it to us, though. We are being exploited and being used and duped.
I hear you, Dave. I hear you. Although I still think that more than 50 million Americans voted for Bush, and we've got to get through to our fellow citizens, because in a landslide, I still don't think they can cheat enough to put an election past us. But thanks very much for your call and for your participation, as you always do.
You know I believe they did.
Yeah, I know you do. And I'm open. I'm open to it. I just need to see more evidence. There's no question they did it in Florida in 2000. The evidence is overwhelming. I'm still looking at the evidence, and I'm going to learn some tomorrow. And I hope you will too, Dave. You'll tune in.
I will.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Mark.
I do want to go, before we go to commercial break, I want to talk about the new revelations about torture. Because, again, when this story first came out, the administration said, there are a few people that were going running amok in Abu Ghraib. And now we know that's simply not the case. In internal report after internal report, we know that U.S. leaders in Iraq were told of the torture allegations, approved the torture, and it was not restricted to Abu Ghraib. In fact, even Don Rumsfeld has conceded, in at least one case, we know that there are hundreds and thousands of cases, he was hiding prisoners from the International Red Cross. Now, this is important because throughout all the allegations of torture. The administration was relying on the Red Cross to argue that torture wasn't going on. Let me read to you some comments. In November 2002, when we first saw the photographs of people being hooded and tortured at Abu Ghraib, Defense Department spokeswoman Tori Clark said, quote, "People also know, but should be reminded, we have the International Red Cross to ensure that the treatment of detainees is absolutely appropriate. We had Navy Secretary Gordon England tell the CNN in August," and I'm thankful, by the way, to the New Republic for bringing out some of these quotes. He said, quote, "The international community of the Red Cross is here regularly. I can't imagine that someone would not have reported this to the International Red Cross." Well, now the International Red Cross is coming out and saying what we did. They're making it clear that we are not only that we did torture in Abu Ghraib, but we continue to do torture to this day in violation of the Geneva Convention. So, what happens? What happens when the International Red Cross reports that our torture is more repressive now? More repressive now than it was at the time of Abu Ghraib? Well, Rush Limbaugh responds, I guess, understandably. Rush Limbaugh responds, "The International Red Cross hates America. The Wall Street Journal attacks the Red Cross. Fox News attacks the Red Cross." And we even had Don Rumsfeld, in an interview with Bill O'Reilly, say that the Red Cross was advocating the release of these dangerous terrorists. Well, they're not advocating release, Don Rumsfeld, of anyone that's committed any crime. What they're saying is you have to show someone's done a crime before you can hold them. And they're saying, even more so, you can't torture people. And, you know, it's important to recognize it's not just, and I had strapping electrodes to a person's private parts. It's not just that. It's not just that the administration has said that if we torture someone and we get evidence, we can use it against them, which is a clear violation of the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution. It's not just that. We are actually taking hostages. You heard about the terrorists taking hostages? We're taking hostages. What we do is we go to someone's house, and if the person we want isn't home, we take their family member. We take their wives. We take their spouses, and we say, "That's right, we won't release your wife until you turn yourself in." Now, that's also against international law. And I have to ask, if they were doing it to us, if they were taking the wives of U.S. military servicemen and saying, "We won't release them unless you, go into our custody where we can torture you," what would Americans say? I mean, it's not just do we hold ourselves to a higher standard. Do we even hold ourselves to the same standard we're holding the terrorists? You know, one of the things that Alberto Gonzalez approved, the Attorney General designee for George Bush, was that if you don't cause permanent damage to someone, if you bang someone's head against the floor but you don't cause a concussion, he said that's not torture. Some organ damage is okay as long as it's not permanent organ damage. But how are our troops to know if the organ damage that they're inflicting, whether it's permanent or not? We know that when an American GI wore an orange jumpsuit in Guantanamo Bay and pretended to be a prisoner, he was banged on the head so many times, this American GI, that he had a concussion and he has permanent brain damage. And in fact, the only reason why it stopped, of course we know, was because he said, he managed to croak out, "I'm an American GI, stop." How many people are we taking it too far? How many people are we actually murdering? I have now three separate sources, all of whom insisted on secrecy, to show that we have killed, or at least they've died in prison, in our custody, at least 2,000 people. That's a story that has not come out yet. I'm giving you the inside scoop on it. I expect it to come out, I don't know, maybe when this administration is gone. But remember what happened in Vietnam when people like John Kerry mentioned the atrocities our troops were doing there. People said, "How dare you? How dare you attack our troops and saying they're committing these atrocities?" Well, they were well documented. And these atrocities are documented as well. And it doesn't in any way, cause any disrepute to our troops who are there to say that many of them are following orders and committing atrocities. And that not only do those people have no place in the military, but the people ordering them to do it, all the way up to Don Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, and the President of the United States, have no authority to do that. No authority, no right under ethics, under law, under the Constitution, under illegal conventions. International conventions say it's illegal. And more than that, it's just morally wrong. All these people that are supposed to be good Christians, do they really believe in torture? Does it help us in the war against terrorism at all? And do we hold ourselves to any standards apart from the Iraqis? Apart from Al-Qaeda? If we have killed 100,000 civilians, isn't that something that Americans should know about? But of course, we have the most secretive government known in American history, at least since post-war American history. And again, you know, those that support the war are silent. What do you say to all of this? Well, whether you support it or not, let me encourage you to call in during the commercial break. It's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. The people who are deserting from the military so as not to commit torture, are they, should they be punished by death, as some Americans argue, for desertion? Or are they American heroes for following, in essence, the Nuremberg rules? That's not something you're likely to hear in the mainstream press. But we got to go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about those that have deserted and whether there's a future in Iraq. Call in 877-57-SCOOP. We appreciate your calls. 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back after this.
George W. likes to live in his own world. In fact, being Bush seems like a joyful, almost dreamlike experience. Reality, for example, never intrudes into his consciousness. And his lies, even as big as whoppers, seem most sincerely to be believed by him. I have no doubt that he thinks he served in the National Guard, for example. For his second term, George is drawing his world even tighter, moving swiftly to eliminate advisors and officials who might tell him things he doesn't want to hear, further shielding him from bothersome realities in the world. Colin Powell was quickly ushered out the door, even though he had dutifully and unwittingly lied for Bush about those non-existent weapons of mass destruction. Powell was always questioning the blind rush into the war, so George has now plucked this irritant from his administration. Condi Rice, his worshipful national security advisor, has been moved into Powell's chair, and Bush can certainly trust that she won't disturb his consciousness with anything that goes against his neocon ideology. Likewise, his longtime legal lackey, Al Gonzalez, has been dispatched to head the Justice Department, where he can grind out memos to rationalize and legalize any little old thing that strikes George's noggin. Al, you might remember, is the guy who wrote the White House memo saying that torturing Iraqi prisoners was legally okie-dokie. Then there's the CIA, which kept sending intelligence reports to the White House warning that the Iraqi invasion and occupation would have messy consequences. George didn't like to hear that, so now he's put political hack Porter Goss at the CIA helm. Goss is purging top agents who have disagreed with Bush's disastrous policies, warning all CIA employees that their job is to, quote, support the administration and its policies in our work. This is Jim Hightower saying, there. Don't you feel better knowing that George won't be bothered by any unwanted advice or unpleasant reports?
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know, and surely the government did not want all that publicity of Don Rumsfeld and his talk in Kuwait before the troops. And when we spoke about this, I spoke about it with my guest, Republican, College Republican Chair Tom Robbins yesterday. Tom responded with, I think, a typical Republican response, which is, well, troops voted for him, so they must approve what he's doing. And I think that fails to understand what's going on, just as those who would say, well, you know, I think all Americans that voted for the war support the money that's going to Halliburton and all the profits that are being made for the very rich. When you look at the people who voted for Bush, it is possible, I think it's actually quite likely, that they hold two somewhat contradictory ideas in their mind at the same time, but that are completely contradictory. They support the war in Iraq, and why they do so, well, they're mad about 9/11, or they truly think that Saddam Hussein's a bad guy, which he is, and they're glad to knock him out, even if he's not the most severe threat to us or to his own people in the world. Mostly, I think it's, hey, you know, we're there, we're fighting. It's very hard to fight a war you don't believe in. How are you going to get up every day and put on a very heavy pack and carry a gun and risk your life and kill people and see your buddies die if you don't believe in what you're fighting for? And so even if you don't believe it, you try to convince yourself, right? I mean, if you're in a hellhole, and maybe Gordon, who he served in Vietnam, can tell us about it, but if you're in a hellhole and you're fighting to live, well, you have to believe in it. You have to try to believe in it. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to get up in the morning, and you'll probably be more likely to be killed. So, of course, the troops are voting that the war in Iraq continue, but they're voting that they get the armor and resources they need. And it's perfectly reasonable to know that people who support the war in Iraq also want our government to provide for them. And that's why when Thomas Wilson, the private specialist from Tennessee who raised this question with Don Rumsfeld, when he raised his point, the troops cheered. And let's look at what Don Rumsfeld said. He said, hey, you know, it's not my fault. Sorry, you fight with the army you have, not with the army you want or wish to have. And by saying that, he pretended that he played no role in the army we have or the army we wish to have. And yet, it is Rumsfeld's stated objective, and has been for many years now, precisely to deny the kind of heavy armor that the troops want. For example, in 2002, Rumsfeld advocating cutting funding for the 70-ton Abrams tank that's used in the streets of Baghdad today, because he didn't want armies to have these heavy forces. He wanted these light, easily deployable forces. So he's been against armor. And Rumsfeld acts like, oh, well, you know, hey, there's nothing I can do about it. Rumsfeld also was very much against putting enough troops in Iraq to pacify it in the first place. When General Tommy Franks first was given an assignment to find out how many troops we need, Frank said, we need 500,000 men and women. We need a seven-month buildup. We need to do what we did in Desert Storm. And Rumsfeld said, nope, too much, come back to me. And he came back with 400,000. He said, too much. And he came back with 240,000. As I said, Wolfowitz said, hey, we only need 10,000. They're going to greet us with roses in the street. And finally, they settled on 140,000. Even though, by the way, all our intelligence said they would not greet us with roses. They would not treat us as liberators. The State Department, Colin Powell, was saying that. What did he know that the people like Don Rumsfeld didn't know? It is Rumsfeld's choice It is Dick Cheney's choice. It is the president's choice to the extent that he makes any decisions in this White House, something I'm not convinced about. But it is clearly the Bush administration's choice not to supply enough armor. They wanted a light, easily deployable force, and now they're seeing that that solution's not good. So instead of saying we were wrong, it's, oh, well, you fight with the army you have. And by the way, you could even get killed with body armor. You don't need body armor. You could be shot in the face. Look on the bright side. If you think about it, as Don Rumsfeld said, if you think about it, and I'm sure you haven't thought about death because you're in the military and I think about your lives, you don't think about your lives. Think about how condescending that is. If you think about it, you can have all the armor in the world in a tank and a tank can be blown up, he said. That's about a direct quote. Quote, and if you think about it, you can have all the armor in the world in a tank and a tank can be blown up. And you can have an up-armored Humvee and it can be blown up, unquote. Which, in essence, is saying, you can have all the body armor in the world and you can be shot in the face. Look on the bright side. You may not need it. You may not need it. You may not need body armor. You might be shot. You could be shot in the face. True, armor would save your tank if it were shot at, but it could hit a mine and you could be gone anyway. So don't worry, soldier. Everything's just fine. What can I say? Administration is only learning this issue. It is not a new issue. It is an old issue. And it's fascinating to me that it's only now we see in CNN, oh, a number of companies in the United States are now working on armor. And that's indeed the power of the press. When you don't control Congress and they can't investigate the president and nor the courts, say no. We understand it is our job. You elected us. We Republican members of Congress, you elected us so that we would never question the president. And except for John McCain, really about the only one, Chris Shays, or a couple others, but generally, as a member, as an institution, the Republican Congress will not investigate the president. I got to praise the Democrats. They've decided if they can't formally investigate the president, they're going to informally do so. And in fact, they've come out and said, we're going to hold hearings. If the official body that's supposed to hold the hearings, the subcommittee over, is going to hold the hearings, then we won't get involved. But if they don't, we're going to hold our own hearings. And the Republicans are welcome to come. But if they don't, we will still investigate the president. The Democrats didn't do that in Bush's first term, but they are going to do it in the second term, and I got to praise them for that. And one last thing to those who say, oh, well, those deserters are awful. They need to be shot. And how dare people not want to serve their country when they're called back? I mean, I've had people argue with me. It's not a backdoor draft, Mark. They signed on to it. They signed on. They knew full well what they were signing. Well, I think we should take a look at what they were signing. One of the military's most recent programs is called the Try One program. Try one. Try a year. Try a year with the military. If you like it, great. If you don't, you're out. I mean, that's what try one would suggest, right? Try one. Try means, right, you can try it, and if you don't like it, you get out. Try one. As John Stewart famously pointed out, they didn't read the small print, which is try one, get one free. But actually, there was small print, and this is no joke. The authority that allows the administration to do a backdoor draft was in small print. And what was the small print? It was AR-145-1. And in fact, if you look at the actual documents that our people in the military signed, underneath it, it says authority AR-145-1, which makes you think, like any time you have a document, you ever signed a tax document? It says at the bottom, authority tax code 428BA6, whatever. And you say, oh, well, that must be what gives them authority to ask me these tax questions. But that's misleading because AR-145-1 doesn't give authority for the general form that the people in the military were signing. No. No, indeed, what it does is it requires people in the military to be drafted for the rest of their lives, even after they've tried one and don't want one anymore. And that, my friends, is fraud. That is intentional misrepresentation. These 17-year-olds were tricked into signing away their lives. And if we have to trick them, then why are we doing it? George Bush said in his election, this is an all-volunteer army. But is it really all-volunteer if people are being made to serve? So there are two lawsuits going on, one for people who don't want to serve, and are being forced to, one for people who do want to serve and cannot. And, of course, I've given my solution on this program before, and that is, you want to resist the backdoor draft? Come out of the closet. We can solve two problems in one. That's it for the Inside Scoop today. Tune in tomorrow. We've got a very special show. We're going to talk about Ohio in detail with people on the ground there who are going to tell us all the things that, that our caller talked about. What went wrong in the election? Is it enough to make a difference? And what can we do about it both this year and in the future? Please tune in tomorrow for a very special edition of the Inside Scoop focusing on the Ohio recount. But that's it for now.